It's 27 minutes to 12. You're listening to 9 to Noon. Dana Johansson is our NZ Sports correspondent. Good morning, Dana.
Kia ora, Catherine.
So let's begin with the story you're running today online, the New Zealand Olympic Committee's controversial top 16 selection policy. What is it, please?
Yeah, it's kind of an issue that comes up every Olympic cycle, but there's probably not a great deal of understanding among the wider New Zealand public about what it actually is. So I guess firstly to outline how an athlete has to get selected for the Games, it's kind of a three-step process. So firstly, they have to qualify, so meet their own international federation's criteria, and then they have to be nominated by their sport to the NZOC to be selected. And this is where the tricky part comes in, because the NZOC, they apply an additional selection criteria on top of what the federation rules are to those athletes. So they have to prove that they're capable of finishing in the top 16 at the Olympic Games and have the potential to win an Olympic diploma, which is a top 8 finish. So it creates situations where athletes that have like fought and often funded themselves to get that qualifying criteria are then excluded from the Games team. And I guess critics are really concerned about the impact that has on not only athlete individual aspirations, but what impact that's having on sports. It has been in place now for about 20 years, and it's starting to sort of have a real impact on some of those smaller sports, particularly those smaller sports in New Zealand that have a big global reach. So it's very difficult to achieve that top 16 standard.
So what's being talked about is an alternative to this. And it's interesting that you mention those smaller sports, because the Olympics themselves are going through a change, right? There's a heck of a lot of new sports coming in that are regarded as being a bit more contemporary, that might appeal to a new generation. And is that relevant in the context as well?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, that the Olympic program changes each game. So there's some sports that aren't really, they don't have any national bodies or aren't properly organised in New Zealand, that are now these, you know, have a big stage on the Olympic platform. So it's understanding where to dedicate resource to that as well. I guess what critics say need to happen is that there needs to be a wider review of this policy. As I say, it's been in place 20 years now, so there's ample data and evidence now to have a look at the broader impacts of the policy. The NZOC do conduct reviews after every major games, but it is in the form of, I understand, a survey, and it's not clear how widely, I guess, NSOs consult within their sports about the rules. It could just be one person within each sport responding to that survey. I think the main issue is that a blanket top 16 clause doesn't always make sense when the sides of the fields and the global competitiveness can vary quite wildly from sport to sport, and sometimes even within sports. Like, you look at track and field, and it's very difficult to prove you're top 16 capable in an event that's really competitive, like sprinting and marathon, where the fields are quite big. But some of those niche field events like high jump and shot put, for example, they have a lot smaller fields, and therefore it's easier to meet the criteria.
And this has affected people ahead of the Tokyo Games. I think Zoe Hobbs, one of those affected, right, meets qualifying in her sport, but...
Yeah, that's right. That was that kind of really thrust it into the public consciousness ahead of Tokyo, was that we had our two big sprinters, Zoe Hobbs and Eddie, also Nketiah. You know, these sprinters are considered to be once-in-a-generation sprinters, and they were left out of the Games team, and people couldn't understand it. But you look at sprinting, and it's a hugely competitive sport, very difficult to prove top 16. Obviously, Zoe Hobbs has gone on to achieve remarkable things over the last 4 years, and, you know, it was a no-brainer including her in the team this year. She's now broken that 11-second barrier. But on the flip side of that, Eddie Osei-Nketiah has walked away. He's now taken up a college football scholarship in Hawaii. And he, when he left... as the New Zealand record holder, had also achieved a semi-final place at the World Championships. He really felt that he was haunted by not being able to achieve this lifetime goal.
So sports like the likes of badminton, you mentioned judo, fencing and others, and these are all, you know, these are all classic Olympic sports, really. But it's just a very different path for any athletes here. Has there been, sorry if you've mentioned it already, has there been any, there's a review after every Olympics, there'll be a review after Paris, right? But has there been any indication of a willingness to move by the committee, or is it pretty...
They're certainly open to looking at the rule. And as I say, there is a review after every major games, but it is in survey form. And they have sort of tweaked the rules as they've gone along. They've introduced this kind of future performer exemption. So that provides a sort of pathway for young athletes that may not meet the top 16 criteria at this point in time, but are considered to be, you know, even medal capable down the track in 4 years' time in LA. They now have a pathway of being included in these games. But certainly that top 16 rule doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And it's been suggested that maybe there needs to be a wider review of the broader impacts on the sector as a whole, because certainly it is impacting those sports. I spoke to a very passionate former national badminton coach who's now in Australia. He leads the Australian system over there. There are no additional performance standards applied by the Australian Olympic Committee. And he points out that, you know, they perform exceptionally well on the international stage, not simply in badminton. I mean, across, you know, they don't apply any additional selection criteria to their Olympic team. And, you know, they're consistently towards the top of the medal table.
All right. Mental health in the Olympics. This is interesting. Obviously, athlete mental health is regularly revisited, but what's happening with respect to the Olympics?
Yeah, so the IOC have really spent a lot of time this cycle sort of thinking about how they can improve mental health outcomes for athletes and really making sure the games environment is psychologically safe. So they are rolling out an AI tool that will sort of weed out any athlete abuse during these games. How it works is this AI app, I think it's designed to recognise targeted abuse, and then it sort of flags these messages and they're sent to a human to figure out if it is indeed abuse, and if so, it's removed from the platform entirely before any individual sees it. So it's kind of a way of insulating athletes from abuse during these games.
Roll that out to the entire world?
I know. Well, actually, accredited media for these games can also access it, so I might give it a whirl as well, although I don't tend to get a lot of abuse on social media, but it might be interesting to see how it all works.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So that is so it's on their own feeds, right? This will intervene. Very, very interesting.
Yeah,
what else
are
Olympic officials doing? I don't know how long this has been on their radar in terms of doing proactive measures with respect to athlete mental health. There's been some very high profile athletes, sometimes actually in sports like tennis in particular, one thinks of speaking out about it. But what else has the Olympics got on its radar with respect to it?
You think about the classic example in Tokyo was Simone Biles having to withdraw from the Olympic Games, and she got incredible backlash from some people back at home. So that's one of the examples, I guess, that put it on the IOC's radar. The other thing they're doing is they've really built this entire mental health action plan around these games to kind of promote better mental health outcomes for athletes. They've put together some sort of toolkit, and so athletes will get automatic access to licenses for the mindful app like Calm, and they have a day-to-day sort of wellbeing support program, so there's a helpline available for more serious issues. I think there's alongside they have sort of access to gym facilities, but they also have a space designated to mental decompression to kind of allow them to kind of shut out the noise of the Olympic Village, because I can imagine it'd be a really overwhelming space to be in. And also, so any athlete competing in Paris can access mental health support in their home country for 4 years after the Games. So that's probably the key one, is that they won't just sort of leave the Games and not be looked after.
Well, you know, when you think of some of your previous investigative reporting, Dana, that is... you know, it's a significant and relevant move. Okay.
Absolutely. We know that after the Olympic Games, it is a high-risk time for athletes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, rugby, there's some rule changes coming. when you come and say there are no rule changes coming, you'll be breaking a story. But all right, what are we looking at? Are we getting rid of that damn video ref? That's the first thing I want, the VFV, whatever it was.
Well, no, I think that's here to stay, but they're certainly trying to limit their interventions.
When it's asked for, when there is dangerous play, and then when the ref asks, that's what I want for what that's worth. Now, carry on. What is coming?
Well, World Rugby have really put on the sales pitch. So they say these rules are about seeking to increase rugby's accessibility and relevance among a broader, younger fan base by embracing on-field innovation and reimagined presentation of the sport with compelling storytelling. So... The kind of key ones for me are there's kind of three immediate changes that come into effect immediately across the board, and that is that scrums will be outlawed from free kicks. So teams they only have the option now of kicking or tapping the ball, so that's going to speed up the game heaps. The second change is around kicks and open play, and so they've sort of made a slight tweak to the offside rule, and so that's to kind of reduce the amount of kick tennis that has become a phenomenon in particularly in the European game. And then the other one is a really around safety, and they've banned the crocodile roll, which I've never heard of, but I do recognise it, the act. It's when a defending player is sort of twisted in the tackle area off their feet, so that's going to be banned. And alongside this, they've also introduced a whole bunch of what they're calling closed law trials. So the 20-minute red card, which has sort of been on the horizon for so long, and it has been trialled quite successfully in Super Rugby, so that World Rugby's still not convinced on that one, so they're now conducting more trials.
That red card, and you said that... I'm trying not to swear. It begins with B and ends with Y. You know, waiting for that minute analysis by 15 people up in the stand somewhere to decide whether one thing's a red card and another's not. I mean, that just blows your mind. So, I mean, you want a serious sanction, right? And maybe there should still be a sending-off option for a ref, again, by discretion, but... It became a real... And, you know, if it happens like in the first 5 minutes of play or something, the match is practically over.
Yeah, so I guess that's the kind of thinking behind the 20-minute red card, is that the player can be replaced after 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Just they can't come back onto the field. It has to be another player.
Another player. Okay, gymnastics, what's happening?
Yeah, we have an artistic gymnast that is going to the Olympics. Obviously, New Zealand doesn't have a great deal of pedigree in artistic gymnastics. We have had some great success in the trampolining. So we've got a freshly minted Kiwi by the name of Georgia Rose Brown. She is going to represent New Zealand after switching allegiances from Australia to New Zealand at the beginning of the year. So really exciting to see how she goes. Apparently... She's pretty strong on the uneven bars. That's considered her strongest event. So, good one to... I love the gymnastics anyway, so I'll be watching. But absolutely cool to have a Kiwi in there.
Very good. Thanks so much, Dana Johansson, RNZ sports correspondent.